From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, a major victory yesterday for supporters of same-sex marriage. Among our neighbors to the north, Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien's government cleared the way for Canada to soon become one of the first countries in the world to legalize the marriage of gay and lesbian couples. In the United States, serious new momentum is also gathering for same-sex marriage, with big developments expected now within days or weeks. Tonight, On Point, the prospects and politics of a marriage revolution. We begin with an overview of the gathering developments in Canada and across the United States concerning gay marriage. We spoke with Ross Sneed, a reporter for the Associated Press. I asked him about this week's decision in Canada and what it meant for the big picture of same-sex marriage.
As you know, there's no same-sex marriage that's legal anywhere in the United States. There are a number of states where steps have been taken. The biggest steps were in Vermont in 2000 when the state legislature and the governor enacted civil unions, which give the benefits of marriage to gay and lesbian couples, but stop short of calling it marriage. California recently adopted something similar. I don't believe it goes quite as far, that allows gay and lesbian couples there to access many of the rights and privileges of marriage. In Canada, of course, they're moving very quickly toward full marriage rights for gay and lesbian couples. There have been court cases up there. The administration of Prime Minister Jean Chrétien apparently is putting together a proposed law. In the United States, it's more of a question for the courts. There are pending lawsuits in Massachusetts where the Supreme Judicial Court is expected to rule later in the year. There is a case in New Jersey, a case in Indiana where a couple is asking the state to either recognize the civil union that they obtained in the state of Vermont or else to give them a marriage license. So there are a number of attempts through the courts to try to move this forward. There are also some legislative proposals around the country, but so far it appears that legislatures have been reluctant to take this up.
Ross, let's look at a few of the key pieces here. First, because it's happening right now, as we understand, after this latest court ruling in Canada, Prime Minister Jean Chrétien has told reporters that there will be legislation ensuring same-sex marriage in Canada. It's a huge example. Just north of the border, it will go into effect in Ontario very soon, we're told. What will the effect be for the United States? Will American couples be able to go north of the border, get married, come back to the United States, and be legally married or not?
Well, I doubt in the eyes of governments in the United States. Let's take Vermont as an example, because people who obtain a civil union in the state of Vermont are recognized under state laws as essentially being married. It is a different word, but they are able to access all of the benefits available under state law. But those benefits aren't available once you cross state lines, and no other state recognizes civil unions, nor does any other state recognize marriage for same-sex couples.
So it may serve primarily then as an example north of the border. Let's turn to Texas then. There's a case before the Supreme Court now challenging Texas sodomy laws. Now, this is only peripherally related, but if the Supreme Court decides in favor of the plaintiffs, two gay men who were thrown in jail after police came upon them in the middle of sex, if the Supreme Court decides in their favor, that would mean that gay sex is constitutionally protected by the right to privacy.
That's right. The U.S. Supreme Court is considering that case. And, of course, I believe it was in 1986 that the U.S. Supreme Court considered another case almost identical to this. I believe it was from Georgia, and the Supreme Court said there was no legal standing for this couple and did not strike down sodomy laws. The fact that the court accepted the case this time suggests that there might be a different view among the justices, but of course that would be a much narrower legal issue than the issue of marriage, right?
Of course, but it seems in a way like it's clearing underbrush. Now, turning to the Massachusetts courts, if they decide, and this could come within days, as I understand, if they decide in favor of same-sex marriage and Massachusetts permits such marriages, would those marriages have legal standing in all the 50 states or not?
Probably not, at least not immediately. There's this thing called DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, that was enacted at the federal level, and then there are these mini DOMAs in many states around the country that says marriage is defined as a union between one man and one woman, and it says that no unions between two men or two women will be recognized. So if Massachusetts were to give marriage rights to residents of that state, anybody that got a marriage there would probably have to challenge, go to court and challenge any local, state, or federal laws to try to get that marriage recognized.
So does that mean, Ross Sneed, that same-sex marriage will have to be fought state by state through all 50 states before it would become the law of the land? Is there no one decision that would make it national law?
Yes, there is a way that you could do it in one fell swoop. It's unlikely that it'll happen this way, but somebody, let's say one state enacts gay marriage law and somebody gets a marriage there and then sues the federal government demanding recognition of that marriage, and it would presumably go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and if the U.S. Supreme Court were to say gay marriage should be recognized, then that would be the law of the land. And I think fairly quickly you would see all the 50 states recognizing marriages. But that's, I think, probably a long way off.
It is interesting that we're seeing this issue heat up and this momentum right into the teeth of the early days of the 2004 presidential campaign. Ross Sneed, how do you see this playing out politically? Will Republican and Democrat candidates for the presidency feel obliged to take a stand on same-sex marriage? How's this likely to unfold?
I presume that they will. In 2000, they had to. The Vermont law was very much in the news then. It had just been enacted into law, and so the candidates were asked. And this year, former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, who signed that bill into law, is a candidate and has been out in front on support for marriage benefits for same-sex couples, but he says he would not support full marriage. He just thinks that that's one step too far. I think, frankly, he's made the political calculation that the electorate isn't quite ready for that yet. But the nine Democrats who are running for the nomination have all addressed it in one way or another, and you have to believe that it will also be an issue in the fall campaign.
And where is President Bush on the record here?
Well, President Bush has said that it is an issue for the states to decide, and the federal government doesn't need to get involved in it. My understanding of his position is that he would not support actual marriage for same-sex couples.
Ross Sneed, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Ross Sneed is a reporter for the Associated Press. He spoke with us from Burlington, Vermont. We will ensure that our legislation includes and legally recognizes the union of same-sex couples, said Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, after the Canadian Cabinet decided this week to drop an appeal against a law that would legalize marriage between gay and lesbian couples. It was a major victory for homosexual men and women in Canada and fresh inspiration to same-sex marriage advocates around the world, especially in the United States, where a series of key decisions on the future of gay marriage are looming right now. But opposition is also deep, and the cauldron of a presidential campaign is looming suddenly. Same-sex marriage is headed deep into hot issue territory. Tonight on Point, same-sex marriage on a near horizon. Do you support or oppose same-sex marriage in the United States? What's the most compelling argument for? What's the most compelling argument against? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York City is Eric Wolfson, Executive Director of Freedom to Marry. Good evening and welcome, Eric Wolfson.
Thank you. It's Evan Wolfson, but thanks.
Excuse me. My apologies.
No problem.
Evan Wolfson.
I've been called worse.
I imagine. And joining us tonight from Montreal, Canada is Dan Seery, Co-Director of the Institute for the Study of Marriage, Law, and Culture. Welcome, Dan Seery.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Dan Seery, let me come to you first, because Canada is where the action has been this week. Is it now just as clear as we're hearing that gay and lesbian couples will soon be able to fully legally marry coast to coast in Canada?
I think so. There was a slight ambiguity in the Prime Minister's comments in the sense he referred to same-sex unions. That might have been just a bit of reticence on the part of the Prime Minister. I think that was clarified by the Justice Minister that they are definitely talking about same-sex marriage.
All the reports we get out today say that, that's what's coming down the rails. Is that Jean Chrétien still trying to straddle here politically? Or I thought it was quite clear from what's happened that this is coming.
Yes, I think it is, yeah.
So how,
the only qualification would be they have also opened it up to a free vote in Parliament that may, depending on how the debate goes leading up to the vote, it may raise some questions. About 4 years ago, there was an open vote in Parliament on the question of the definition of marriage. And the vote was in favor of the existing definition of marriage by, I think, 216-55. I don't know how much that has changed over the last 3 or 4 years.
Dan Seery, how does this play out politically in Canada? Polls in the United States are certainly not clear in their support of gay marriage. Where do Canadian polls come down? Where does Canadian public opinion come down?
I think it's generally more favorable to the option of same-sex marriage. In Quebec recently, there was civil unions legislation passed last year, which went a long, long way, probably a lot further than the Vermont legislation, to establishing something comparable to a marital category for same-sex couples.
And Dan, what about the implications for the United States? Canada's actions, we read, follow steps in Netherlands and Belgium. But in the Netherlands, there's a long residency requirement before foreign couples can get married. And Belgium doesn't permit same-sex marriage among couples from countries that themselves do not allow such unions. Canada has no residency requirement, so presumably Americans could drive to Canada and get married, but when they go back to the United States, would it have any weight whatsoever?
Probably not. I mean, that's up to the U.S. Political jurisdictions to decide. But I suspect that what will emerge, at least what is emerging in terms of the Canadian scene, is a fuller expression of same-sex marriage than you would find in Belgium and Holland. For example, in those two jurisdictions, I think there is still restrictions in terms of parental rights and such things. That does not seem to be the route Canada is going.
In other words, Canada will be bestowing the full rights and regard of marriage.
I think so. That's the thrust of the court decisions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the differences, I think, between Canada and Belgium and Holland is that this... In Canada, I think probably as the comment was made earlier, this too is a court-driven movement. About 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, there were a series of court cases launched in Quebec, Ontario, and B.C. And it's become essentially, argued from an equality and human rights position. So the existing definition of marriage has been defined as constitutionally invalid and discriminatory because it's prejudicial against same-sex mm-hmm. couples.
And Evan Wolfson, let me turn to you. In the United States, there's a lot pending right now. Do you feel you're with Freedom to Marry? You're an advocacy group for same-sex marriage. Do you feel the wind at your back?
No question about it. And this decision out of Canada, which is a human rights milestone looked at around the world, puts terrific wind in our sails. We are in the middle of a civil rights movement to end discrimination in marriage here in the United States. As you mentioned earlier, courts are considering this question, legislatures are debating it, politicians are discussing it, and polls are showing increasing support with overwhelming majority support amongst young people. It's only been about 10 years since Americans have been asked to think about it, and clearly when they do think about it, they more and more understand that there's no good reason for this exclusion.
So how fast, Evan Wolfson, do you see this going in the U.S.? What are your, from your group's point of views, what are your highest hopes?
Oh, I think it's pretty clear that at least one state, at least the first state, will begin the end of sex discrimination in marriage, just as we ended race discrimination in marriage a generation ago. And I think that decision will come within 5 years and possibly even within a matter of months. Canada has shown that this can happen. Americans are now seeing every day as they look across the border that same-sex couples are legally married and the sky has not fallen. And one of the points I would just want to make about the discussion you've had so far is that you've talked about it as if, is this going to happen, will this happen, and so on. The fact of the matter is it has already happened. Since June 10th, when the Ontario court ruled, couples have begun getting married. There are hundreds of couples who are now legally married, same-sex couples, many of them Canadian, many of them binational, and
happening
some of them
in Canada,
coming
to the United States, perhaps soon. We're looking tonight at the new momentum towards same-sex marriage and whether it's coming to your state soon. What are the real gains for gays in marriage? Practical advantages, moral equivalency, social acceptance, endorsement? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. This is On. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the new momentum towards same-sex marriage and whether it's coming to your state soon. My guests tonight are Evan Wolfson, joining us from New York. He's executive director of Freedom to Marry. And from Montreal, Canada, Dan Seary, co-director of the Institute for the Study of Marriage, Law, and Culture, teaches ethics at McGill University. You can join the conversation as well. Do you support or oppose same-sex marriage in the United States? What's the most compelling argument for legalizing same-sex marriage? What's the most compelling argument against? And is America, is your state ready for same-sex marriage? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Evan Wolfson, let me put the issues straight to you. There's a lot of practical aspects we'll talk about tonight, but when you make the argument, are you making it, as we've heard earlier from Dan Seary here, on human rights grounds? How do you make the argument for gay marriage, same-sex marriage?
Well, there's no question that it is a question of human rights, but it is also a very important practical and personal question that matters for people. These are families who seek the protections that other families have to take care of their loved ones in times of crisis, in times of sickness, in times of health. Marriage is the gateway to all kinds of protections, benefits, responsibilities that make a real difference in people's lives. And first and foremost, it is about real people being able to make that commitment of love and obtain those protections. What the Canadian court said is that the discrimination here is very clear. It infringes on human dignity to say that these couples and their loved ones are not entitled to the legal respect of marriage. And the court said it does them real harm to deny them the protections and benefits that come with marriage. And so what we're talking about here is giving Americans a chance to see real-life couples caring for their families, fighting over who takes out the garbage, taking care of the kids, filling out mortgage forms, going to banks to take out loans, enrolling the kids in school, doing everything that married people do as legally married couples. And when people see that, they're going to understand that no one gets hurt here, but couples are helped. And that's why they're going to support ending this discrimination as we engage in this discussion over time.
And Dan Seary, there you are in the country that's now doing this in a very interesting position yourself, co-director for the Institute for the Study of Marriage, Law, and Culture. You must have spent a lot of time thinking about this issue. How do you come to it? What are the advantages? What are the disadvantages of same-sex marriage?
Well, I've come to this debate late, as many of us on the side of arguing for caution have. I mean, the whole debate, in a sense, is relatively new. It started in the 1990s and has moved at a pace.
Mm-hmm.
I think on one side of the debate, there's a concern about looking at the role of marriage as a cultural institution geared to a specific set of aspirations. Much of the debate has been driven by law and driven by legal theory and human rights arguments, which focus on the individual needs of individual partners. And there's real issues there in terms of equality rights and benefits and concerns about, you know, practical issues that Evan spoke about.
Mm.
But on another level, I think there's a concern about the role of marriage as an institution geared and struggling with one vast domain of human existence, namely the bond, the bridging of the divide between men and women. We are a sexually dimorphic species. That's unique facet of human experience. It's a large and complex aspect. In Canada, the latest census figures indicated about 99.5% of all couples in Canada are opposite-sex couples.
So, Dan, are you suggesting in this line of thinking that the legalization, the formal acceptance of same-sex marriage is somehow a threat to male-female marriage?
Well, in a certain, I think there's a case for caution. Hello?
Yes, we're here, Dan. Oh. Hello, Dan Seary.
Yeah.
We're here, yes.
There's a case for caution to be made. Anthropology, I think, alerts us to the fact that institutions like marriage are not just functional mechanisms to fulfill individual needs. They're multi-layered realities with complex purposes. And marriage encodes a unique set of aspirations in human culture, opposite-sex bonding, procreativity, which is the male-female bond is a social bond that is also a reproductive bond. That's pretty unique in human experience. difference. And it also, I think marriage as a form of life also sort of in a certain soft sense establishes a norm that children have a kind of birthright to be connected to their natural mothers and fathers unless exceptional circumstances dictate otherwise.
And again, are you suggesting that same-sex marriage erodes these aspects of traditional male-female, female-male marriage?
Well, to get there, what happens, I think institutions like marriage are constituted by cultural meanings. And when you challenge some of the core meanings of an institution, I think it does have social impact. We did that certainly with divorce law. And we saw outcomes. We saw a certain sense of the destabilization of marriage because the sense of permanence of marriage was lost. What will the impact be in terms of the transformation of the new public norm of law where we see marriage essentially as a relationship between adults, a close bonded relationship between adults, end of story? I mean, that's the decision of the Canadian courts.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ontario court, for example, said there is no rational connection between marriage and procreation and the raising of children, for example. It argued against any rational connection between marriage and the sense of the challenges of opposite-sex bonding, which has been part of the, in a sense, I think, the fundamental role of the institution has been to try to manage that complex reality.
So as I hear you, Dan Searle, you're not coming at this from a religious perspective, it's from which it's often attacked in the United States, but rather as a kind of a sociological critique that you're making here and raising caution about potential erosion of the procreative marital bond.
Well, sociological, anthropological, I think we need to a sense give a bigger place in the discussion. Move the lawyers a little bit to one side and bring in anthropologists, bring in sociologists, and talk about the role of institutions. We have to pull back the lens a bit from a lot of the rights-based arguments focus us on individual cases. All human beings, I mean, strive for, good personal relations, good dyadic relationships, loving relationships, and so on. But I think institutions and institutions like marriage struggle to manage a particular sector of that.
Mm.
The problem with the same-sex solution is sort of taking one box in a kind of flat-footed way and saying, well, this is the box which everything must fit into, rather than, in a sense, getting out of the box and thinking a bit laterally, what are other options in terms of creative solutions?
So I hear you almost suggesting yes, let's acknowledge homosexual or gay relationships, but let's give them a different formal structure than male female, female male marriage.
Well, I'm not sure. I think this is in part a discussion that needs to be had within the gay and lesbian communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this we have to remember is relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been a jump to the marriage solution as the easiest, quickest solution. I think part of the problem here is jurisdiction. In most of our jurisdictions, the only sort of close personal relationship that's recognized nationally in most jurisdictions is marriage.
Dan Searle, stand by. We lost Evan Wolfson for a moment, but we've got him back now. Evan Wolfson, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
Not at all. If you missed a bit of it, Dan's just been making a kind of anthropological critique, and a calm one, but saying that he feels some sense of caution here, a concern that that same-sex marriage may in some way diminish the institution of female-male, male-female marriage and it's kind of the bond between sexes and the bond around procreation. He's not making a religious argument, but more a sociological or anthropological one. He says perhaps we're too legalistic in insisting that the same institution be bracketed around gay couples. What do you think?
Well, first of all, it is a legal institution. Marriage is a legal institution.
It's more than that, is Dan Searle's point.
I understand that, but first of all, it is a legal institution. The governments issue marriage licenses. It triggers all kinds of legal rights and responsibilities. It triggers legal status and legal effects. And to exclude people from that legal institution because of their race or religion or sex or sexual orientation is wrong. And what the Canadian court said very powerfully is that the discrimination here is clear and the remedy is simple. This is not a very tangled, difficult question. The question is, today, the definition of marriage in Canada and in the United States is a committed relationship between two adults who undertake legal responsibilities, who care for one another, and who play a certain place in society. Mm-hmm. And by that standard, there's absolutely no reason why committed same-sex couples cannot and should not be able to take on that commitment.
Dan Siri?
Now, that does not mean that any other institution in society can't also have their own views and their own definitions. We're not telling religions or churches what they have to think about marriage. They can decide for themselves. But what we're talking about here is the civil legal institution.
Dan Siri, your response.
Yeah, well, I still come back to that point of this kind of one-shoe-fits-all sizes approach. I mean, part of the problem within Canada, as in the States, is that we only have one nationally recognized close relationship, so to speak, and that is the marital category. When the Canadian Federation was founded in 1867, the federal government was given jurisdiction to define that, and the only one it saw there was the marital category and sort of and define the capacity for marriage. But with the evolution of society, I think we're seeing that we need other forms of life to serve other kinds of communities.
Dan Siri, Evan Wilson, stand by. I want to welcome our callers in. Kathy's calling from Ipswich, Massachusetts. Massachusetts. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
I'm calling because I've been affected more through my sister. Mm-hmm. She kind of a real example of kind of the institutional discrimination that comes because single-sex partners cannot get the same representation under the law.
What's her story in a nutshell?
Her story in a nutshell, my sister and her partner died of cancer. They each had a biological child, had been raising them for the last 13 or 14 years.
So a lesbian couple, each with their own children.
Right. Yeah, each have their own child.
Yep.
Two things. One is that after they live in California, they had gone through all the legal preparations to protect themselves as much as possible out of fear of her parents who had disowned her and had never met their biological grandchild.
But her partner died, and?
Her partner died. When her parents found out, they sued my sister for the will. They sued for custody of the partner's biological daughter.
Yeah.
So far, my sister has been able to win most of the cases. She has her last court case, I think, in July.
But it sounds like a heck of a rough road to hang on to what she and her partner had built.
Right, and not only that, my sister's daughter has been claimed as her partner's dependent on every income tax form,
right,
and every on her paperwork at work under her insurance, and they will not recognize her for death benefits under Social Security.
Kathy, thanks for sharing the story. Evan Wilson, this sounds like a kind of case in point that you might point to.
Well, that's exactly right, and it really boils down to something very simple, which is that if we believe that marriage offers an important set of protections and rules and support for non-gay people, why wouldn't that be true for gay people? What we're talking about here is the freedom to marry. I mean, I do agree that there are other family forms, and they are worthy of respect, and the law should have a variety of ways of treating families and meeting people's needs, and gay people are the first people to support that. But that doesn't justify the exclusion of gay people from marriage.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Andrea's calling from DeKalb, Illinois. Hi, Andrea. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
So my partner of 4 years and I want to go up to Canada and get married. We were so excited when we heard this news. And after the euphoria wore down a little bit, we were wondering what this would have, like, practical ramifications when we get home. Like, if we fill in married on our tax forms, if we, like, apply for, like, any sort of insurance or anything like that, and we put in married, what are they going to do? Can they sue us? Can they, like, say that we're committing fraud? We don't even know.
Good practical question. Dan Siri, Andrea, and her female partner, two women, one ahead north to Canada, are thinking about it. If they get married there and come back south and start declaring themselves as married, do you know what the implications might be in the U.S.?
No idea.
Oh, geez. Evan Wolfson, how about you?
Yes, I can answer that question. First of all, it's important to be clear that when couples like the caller come home from Canada, they will be legally married. And for that matter, Canadian couples who are married in Canada and who come to the United States to travel or work or spend tourist dollars or study and come here, they will be legally married.
But legal marriage is all about recognition of the legality. Isn't that the point?
No. First of all, they will be legally married. They have been pronounced married duly under the law of Canada, and they are legally married. And just as when American couples go abroad to another country, they expect to be treated as the married couples they are, those couples will come home here and expect to be treated with respect. And the overarching legal principle in the United States, as in international law, is that a marriage that is valid where celebrated is treated with respect elsewhere.
All right, Evan, we've got that, but Andrea's asking a very practical question. We don't want to leave her out on a limb. If they come back and, for example, file joint tax returns, do they risk being sued by the IRS?
Right, and the answer to that question is these couples are legally married. She's correct that when she comes home and signs that tax form or the mortgage application or the school enrollment, they're going to have to answer honestly that, yes, they are married. But at the same time, they have to be prepared for a mix of respect from some businesses and some states, from discrimination from other businesses and other states, as well as the federal government for now.
But what about legal charges? What about suit? We don't want to leave her exposed with a kind of candy gloss on this.
Well, this is not a candy gloss. This is the reality. The reality is that couples have to understand there will be a mix of respect and discrimination and uncertainty. And what couples can do, for example, is indicate on the form that they're married, but be very clear that they are also a same-sex couple and that they are prepared to abide by the decision that goes forward, and they put it back to the business or the company or the agency in front of them. Do you want to discriminate against me?
Andrea, let me put it to you. Does that leave you feeling confident enough to go north, get married, come home, and act on it?
Well, yeah, it's great. I wonder about the Defense of Marriage Act and everything like that. But if you say that I should just put on there and put an explanation, then I guess that's good enough for me.
Well, no, but I want to be clear that, first of all, that is a valid decision on your part, and the burden really, unfortunately, is on Andrea to some extent, but the question is really back to every one of us in the United States. Do we believe it's right to say that gay people should be discriminated against when they are here married?
Defense of Marriage Act 1996, signed by Bill Clinton, forbids federal recognition of gay unions.
No, what it says is that the federal government will discriminate against the lawful marriages that gay people have. It does not say that businesses must discriminate. It does not say that states must discriminate. And as I said earlier, some states and some businesses will respect those marriages while others discriminate. And you know what? The same thing happened in this country with regard to interracial marriage. There was a long period of time in which interracial couples were respected and honored for their marriage in some states, and others discriminated against them, indeed arrested them.
Evan Wolfson, stand by. We have to take a short break. Andrea, good luck to you, whatever you decide. Listeners, we're talking tonight about the new momentum towards same-sex marriage and whether it's coming to your state soon. Is America, your state, ready for same-sex marriage? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the new momentum toward same-sex marriage and whether it's coming to your state soon. You can join the conversation. Is it high time or no time for same-sex marriage? Will same-sex marriage be a hot potato in the 2004 presidential campaign? And what social ramifications do you foresee if same-sex marriage becomes the law of the land? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking tonight with Evan Wolfson from New York. He's executive director of Freedom to Marry. From Montreal, Canada, Dan Seery, co-director of the Institute for the Study of Marriage, Law, and Culture at McGill University. And we're joined now from Washington, D.C. by Patrick Guerrero, executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. Good evening and welcome, Patrick Guerrero.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us, Patrick. Your group represents gay interests within the Republican Party. How do you see gay marriage playing out as an issue in the 2004 presidential campaign?
Well, I think it's a pretty explosive issue, and I think one of the most important things we need to do is to be clear to use the words Evan used, which is issues of discussing fairness for all American families, including gay and lesbian families, talking about the civil contract versus the kind of religious connotations of marriage, and being clear what we're asking for here, which is basic fairness. The radical right will use this issue to divide the Republican Party and to try to cause a division among the electorate, particularly in southern states.
How do you think George W. Bush's calculus will come down? Will he have to come out on the record opposed to gay marriage?
Well, we would be real pleased if he said what his Vice President Dick Cheney said in the vice presidential debate in the year 2000, that we need to find a mechanism to recognize all the relationships that the diverse American family decides to be in. And if we could get the president to do that, that'd be terrific. My sense is he's not there today. Part of what Log Cabin does is it tries to work in a thoughtful way, sometimes behind the scenes, to educate the nation's leaders to make sure that they move in the direction of understanding we're all valued parts of our family.
Patrick, if you support the vice president calling for a mechanism, what does that mean? Does it mean the same marriage for all kinds of couples, or does it mean something different for same-sex couples?
Well, I think we as an organization, and certainly most of our members, would like a mechanism which we call marriage, which is a civic contract. Unfortunately, when this gets played out in the heat of political exchange, people start referring to forcing churches and religious traditions to accept something. That's not what we're calling for here. We're calling for basic fairness under the law, a recognition of our loving, tax-paying relationships. And to do so, we think we should not give up the word that other dedicated, loving relationships use.
Patrick, Evan, Dan, please stand by. We have a lot of callers who want to join us. Carl's calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
Just let me say, as a Catholic, I think that most of us do support this in one way or another, all day covertly. Secondly, to the point, let me caveat and warn some of the people that called. As an attorney who does international law along the U.S.-Canadian border,
yes,
you have to be careful to distinguish between what the Canadian government will recognize within its residents and having U.S. residents go up, get a document that may not be recognized in their own state.
So to our caller from Illinois, the young woman who said, if I go north with my lesbian partner and get married and come back, what are the ramifications? What's your answer as an attorney in that neck of the woods?
This is just caution. I can't give advice per se, but be very careful, particularly about taxes. If you're going to make statements, make sure you get letters or you call the IRS or you check with your state and local governments before you start making decisions that could come back on you later because they don't have recognition. They're not obligated to recognize everything in one country that's done in another. That's based on treaty. So we have a lot of mutual obligations, but not all of them are recognized. Not all licenses are recognized.
So tread very carefully. Carl, thank you for your call and your advice. Prince is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Prince. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Yes. I've seen that this argument is basically surrounding a legalistic point of view, which I have a question to that. If it's very legal, if it should be legal for two same-sex to get married, shouldn't it be legal for, like, parent of two people of the same parent? Like, for example, if I want to marry my sister, and if you look at it legally, from the point that we are arguing about same-sex marriage, wouldn't it be legal for me to marry my sister?
Prince, your phone line's a little tough, but I think we've got the gist of it. Evan Wolfson, let me put it to you, our caller. Prince wants to equate homosexual marriage with incestuous marriage.
Well, I think it's probably pretty obvious to most people that there are reasons why we have restrictions on people marrying their children or people marrying within families in terms of protecting people who are vulnerable against exploitation and so on. And that's very different from two loving, committed adults who want to take on the commitment of marriage free of discrimination based on their sex. When there was an effort to end, thankfully, restrictions based on race in marriage, people started saying the same things. They said if we allow interracial couples to marry, it'll lead to polygamy and the doom and gloom and destruction of society. And fortunately, the courts and the society didn't listen to those claims, and we did end that discrimination, and society is the richer for it.
Susan's on the line. Welcome, Susan. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Hi.
I have a question for your panelists. I'm actually American, and my female partner is Canadian.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, from their perspective, if there's any, I recognize that it wouldn't be wouldn't be legally recognized in America for us to go to Canada and have a marriage ceremony. But I'm wondering if there's any advantage to it in terms of advancing this cause in the States. In other words, if lots of us go to Canada and get married and come back, does that help in terms of putting pressure to move this agenda forward?
Interesting question, Susan. Thanks for calling. Patrick Guerrero, let me put that to you.
Well, I think the symbolism is truly powerful. I do think, and I am concerned, that for a lot of folks, including gay and lesbian Americans, this is a brand new issue for a lot of people, and we need to be really cautious moving forward with the language we use, the type of actions we take. My guess is that the case coming out of Massachusetts, the Texas sodomy ruling we're expected from the Supreme Court, maybe as early as this coming Monday, is going to cause a backlash from the radical right, and you'll see efforts at really taking steps in the wrong direction. And so I think we need to spend the coming days figuring out a way to focus on the civil contract nature of this issue and also educating the broader gay and lesbian community, because we're not there today.
Patrick, get very practical for a moment. Our time's running down, but how do you expect this to unfold? If the Massachusetts decision and the Supreme Court decision on Texas sodomy laws come down in a way that would favor the same-sex marriage, what do you foresee happening?
I would see the remaining states that don't have not passed DOMA, Defense of Marriage Acts, for them to have a renewed effort on the state level.
Yeah, to build a barricade against this.
Correct. And second, we had three Democrats and three Republicans in Congress who filed a potential constitutional amendment regarding a DOMA-type amendment a couple of weeks ago. And my guess is this will just rally the forces to bring that to the surface in a way that maybe we did not expect a few weeks ago.
So for all the wind in the sails, this is a long way from a decided issue in your mind.
That's right. We've got to navigate this with thoughtfulness, educating ourselves, and be prepared for an onslaught from the far right.
Patrick Guerrero, I want to thank you for joining us tonight.
Glad to be with you.
Patrick Guerrero joined us from Washington, D.C. He is executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. And Evan Wolfson in New York, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
My pleasure.
Evan Wolfson joined us from New York City. He's executive director of Freedom to Marry. And Dan Seery in Canada, where this is already happening and will soon be the fully codified law of the land. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome, Tom.
Dan Seery is co-director for the Institute for the Study of Marriage, Law, and Culture. He teaches ethics at McGill University. Listeners, you can continue this conversation on our website. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. President Bush kicked off what is expected to be the largest political fundraising drive in history last night, appearing before a crowd of supporters who paid $2,000 a head to munch on hot dogs and nachos and hear the commander-in-chief speak. The Bush campaign plans to collect $20 million over the next 2 weeks on its way to an anticipated record-breaking $200 million campaign war chest. Last night's event was, by some accounts, the most lucrative single campaign fundraising event ever. In his address, the president unveiled some of the themes that he will likely use in his reelection campaign. He focused on the challenges he has faced during his first term and declared that on issue after issue, we acted on principle and we made progress for the American people. Here are excerpts from the president's speech.
In the last 2.5 years, our great nation has faced some great challenges, and we have acted decisively to confront them. I came to this office to solve problems, not to pass them on to other presidents and other generations. I came to seize opportunities and not let them slip away. We are meeting the tests of our time. Terrorists declared war on the United States, and war is what they got. We have captured or killed many key leaders of the Al-Qaeda network, and the rest of them know we're on their trail. in Afghanistan, in Iraq, we gave ultimatums to terror regimes. Those regimes chose defiance, and those regimes are no more. $50 million people in those two countries once lived under tyranny, and now they live in freedom. Two and a half years ago, our military was not receiving the resources it needed, and morale was beginning to suffer. We increased the defense budget to prepare for threats of a new era, and today, no one in the world can question the skill and strength and spirit of the United States military. Two and a half years ago, we inherited an economy in recession. Then the attacks on our country, scandals in corporate America, and war affected people's confidence, and that hurt our economy. But we acted. We passed tough new laws to hold corporate criminals to account. We got the economy going again because we worked with the United States Congress to pass historic tax relief not once but twice. In these challenging times, the world has seen America's resolve and courage. And I have been privileged to see the compassion and the character of the American people. All the tests of the last 2.5 years have come to the right nation. We're a strong country, and we will use that strength to defend the peace. We're an optimistic country. We're confident in ourselves, and we're confident in ideals bigger than ourselves. We seek to lift whole nations by spreading freedom. And at home, we seek to lift up lives by spreading opportunity to every corner, to every person of this great country. This is the work that history has set before us. We welcome it, and we know that for our country, better days lie ahead. May God bless you. May God continue to bless you.
President Bush kicking off his reelection campaign at a fundraiser that took in an estimated $3.5 million last night. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amata, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skoog. With help from John Parati, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.